The Senate will come to order. Will everyone in the Senate and the upper galleries please rise for the prayer of our chaplain, the Reverend Gauck, and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
From the 63rd Psalm we hear, my soul will be satisfied as with the riches of foods. With singing lips my mouth will praise you. God of creation, we give you thanks as we return refreshed from our spring break and once again renewed to do what is before us. Grant us, we pray, that our eyes be on what must be done, and our hearts and thoughts set to accomplish all that you have laid ahead of us. And bless us throughout this week with your presence and guidance. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Please be seated. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Brown, Callahan, Chappelle Nadal, Crowell, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Engler, Goodman, Green, Justice, Keviny, Kehoe, Kraus, Lager, Lamping, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Munslinger, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Ferguson, Richard, Ridgway, Roop, Schaff, Schaefer, Schmidt, Stouffer, Wasson, Wright Jones.
Quorum being present, the Senate is in session. Madam Secretary, would you please read the journal for March the 8th?
Journal of the Senate, second regular session, 37th day, Thursday, March 8th, 2012.
Senator for the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have approved that motion.
Really?
Madam Secretary, would you please read the journal from Friday, March 16th?
Journal of the Senate, second regular session.
President. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move further reading of that journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as so having been fully read.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Aye. All opposed say no. The aye appears to have it. The aye does have it. The reading will be dispensed. Order of business. Introduction of guests. Introduction of guests. Petitions, memorials, and remonstrances. Resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you see if there are messages from the House? If there are, I would ask that they be read.
There are messages from the House. Madam Secretary, would you please read those messages?
Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1576, an act relating to the purchase of state health insurance by certain foster parents. Also, House Committee Substitute for House Bills 1258, 1259, and 1260, an act relating to consent for adoption. Also, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1340, an act relating to county officers. Also, House Bill 1404, an act relating to the designation of Missouri Pet Breeders Appreciation Month. Also, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1108, an act relating to caller location information. Also, House Bill 1236, an act relating to third-party candidates. Also, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1098 and 1084, an act relating to the resale of donated goods for charitable purposes. Also, House Bill 1504, an act relating to sales tax, emergency clause adopted. Also, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1042, an act relating to duties prescribed to the Coordinating Board for Higher Education. Also, House Committee Substitute for House Bills 1319, 1045, and 1369, an act relating to weapons, in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Respectfully, Daniel Adam Crumless, Chief Clerk.
Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection, the formal calendar.
Seeing no objection, the Calendar will be Senate bills for perfection. Senate Bill 714, the Senator from Caldwell.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 714 be brought before the body for perfection.
You've heard the motion of the Senator from Andrew. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Atchison.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move for the adoption of the Senate committee substitute. I have an amendment. I believe it's been distributed. I'm having it sent forward. I would request a waiver of the reading, and I would move for the adoption of the amendment.
Seeing no objection, the reading will be waived. Senator from Livingston, would you care to explain your substitute?
Thank you, Mr. President. Before I...
Okay. Senator, you sent up an amendment, so would you move the adoption of the amendment, if you would, please?
Yes, I did, but I will move again for the adoption of the amendment to this Senate committee substitute.
And there, seeing no objection, we will waive the reading of the amendment.
I believe it had been distributed. Yes.
It has been. Senator, would you care to explain the amendment?
Thank you. Mr. President, while we have more folks in here, before I explain my amendment, I'd like to inquire of you.
State your inquiry.
Do you know what today is?
Today is March 19th.
It is, Mr. President. And what happened on March 19th? Do you know what happened on March 19th?
I do not know, Senator.
Well, for all of those folks listening in this chamber, there is someone in here whose birthday is today. And I'm not going to mention her by name, but I think that many of the members of the body were here last year as we celebrated her birthday, and hopefully they will not forget. So with that, Mr. President, I would like to explain my amendment.
Proceed.
Thank you. My understanding is that in committee there was an amendment when they did the Senate committee substitute. The amendment that they added did not clarify correctly. What this amendment does is it attempts to clarify, to fix the amendment that created the Senate committee substitute by changing it from 60 inches in width to 64 inches in width and removing the straddle seats and the steering wheel. Essentially what this is right now in state statute, we have statutory language that defines an all-terrain vehicle. We have statutory language that defines a utility vehicle, but we do not have statutory language that defines a recreational off-highway vehicle. And so therefore, because of that, there's really gray area about what these can be used for. Up in my area where we have a large agriculture background, there are many farmers who use these to hay with or check cattle with, and right now as they travel, let's say from their house to maybe a couple miles down the road to where the cattle may be, although there haven't been problems, there's nothing that clearly defines that is legal for them to do that. This legislation with this amendment would clarify that. I believe they've tried to get this done in the past. And it was actually in the legislation, the transportation bill last year, that was vetoed, if I remember correctly. So with that, Mr. President, I'm happy to answer any questions, and I renew my motion on the adoption of the amendment to the Senate committee substitute.
The senator from Grundy moves the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 1. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from the 13th, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the senator from Nottoway.
Senator, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Senator. Apology.
Yep.
Just walked in. I was dealing with another issue. This allows people to drive four-wheelers on state highways?
There's in the utility vehicle market, there are essentially three types. There's the all-terrain vehicle, which is the four-wheeler. That we already have defined in statute what it takes for them to be able to operate that on a state road. We have the utility vehicle, which is defined by size and width, and we have in statute what it takes for them to be able to operate those on a road, but we have never defined or clearly defined the recreational off-highway vehicle, which is a little bit larger unit. It's like up to 64 inches in width and I think 2,000 pounds.
What is it, a larger four-wheeler?
Yeah, it's essentially like a
Polaris
Ranger or a large Gator, that type of vehicle.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I apologize.
Yeah, no, that's all right.
Further discussion. Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close on the motion for the adoption of the amendment.
The senator from Nottoway moves the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 1 to Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 714. All those in favor say aye. All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted Senate Amendment Number 1. Does any senator desire to be heard on the Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 714? Seeing none, the senator is recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close on the motion for the adoption of the Senate Committee Substitute.
The senator moves the adoption of the Senate Committee Substitute. All those in favor say aye. All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted the Senate Committee Substitute. Senator from Atchison.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would now renew my motion for the perfection of the Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 714 and renew my birthday wishes to the Secretary of the Senate.
We'll recognize most of those motions you just made. The senator moves that Senate Bill 714 be declared perfected and order printed. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
Close.
Senator from Holt renews his motion that Senate Bill number 714 be declared perfected and order printed. All those in favor say aye. All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is declared perfected and ordered printed. Staying on the same calendar, Senate Bill 743, Senator from Phelps.
Mr. President, I move that Senate Bill 743 be taken up for perfection.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Phelps.
Mr. President, I now move that Senate Bill 743 be declared perfected and ordered printed. And what this bill is, this is a helmet bill. This act exempts persons 21 years of age and older from wearing protective headgear when operating or riding a motorcycle or a motor tricycle. And, you know, my district in Pulaski County, I have the largest chapter of the Freedom of the Road Riders in Missouri. They're very active, and this, of course, is one of their biggest issues. They maintain that education related to motorcycle riding is much more important than motorcycle helmets. A lot of research has shown that the helmet is only protective up to about 13 to 17 miles per hour, and so we're requiring people to ride across country on a Harley with a helmet, and kids running around town with scooters aren't wearing helmets at all, and those lower speeds, they might be more protective. So that's kind of just the bill. It's been around a while. Governor vetoed it in 2010. We hope that he will take a better look at it this go around. One of the main reasons he vetoed last time was social burden. We found out that a large majority, about 90%, motorcycle riders actually have health insurance, very good health insurance. So we're hoping that maybe some of the new statistics that's come out will be more in our favor. With that, I'll try to answer any questions someone may have.
The senator from Phelps moved that Senate Bill 743 be perfected. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from the 24th, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the senator.
Senator from Phelps, do you yield?
I certainly do.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, you know, I heard this bill in committee and heard it last year as well, and I just wanted to talk a little bit about my feelings and my thoughts. I really do respect the group that came and testified both last year and this year with respect to this bill. And what I hear from them is the idea of, you know, personal freedom, personal liberty, you know, they are adults, and it's not all states that require a helmet. A lot of states around our state don't require helmets, and that they're, you know, they're big boys and girls, and they can choose to wear a helmet or not wear a helmet. And I respect that, and I appreciate that. The thoughts I had shared with them, particularly this year, was the challenge is, though, is that if something goes wrong and they get hurt to a far greater degree from having not worn a helmet, that they want governments to pick them up. You know, and they want, you know, so if you have a motorcycle accident and you hit your head and you're not wearing a helmet and you suffer to a far greater degree, the expectation is that someone from government, someone will come pick you up take you to the hospital, take you into hospital, have you get fixed, but to the extent you can't get fixed, then you're going to have society take care of you. So you're going to have society, you know, let's take an extreme case where somebody gets in a motorcycle accident, they're hurt to a far greater degree because they don't have a helmet on, and as a result, they're disabled the rest of their lives. Yes. And they expect government to take care of them the rest of their lives. So they're going to go on Social Security disability. They're going to get food stamps. And it's funny because I tried to come up with a bunch of amendments. I said, you know, I'm okay. Let these guys not wear a helmet, but then they're going to have to give up the right to have us take care of them if they have an accident as a result of not wearing a helmet. So, I mean, Senator, what are your thoughts about this? I mean, like, you know, we have helmet laws. We're debating if a helmet makes you better off or worse off. Yeah. But if, in fact, you're better off wearing a helmet, if there's one less injury, I mean, how do you feel about a society having to take care of this person?
Well, I think that what statistics are what we find looking at statistics is the fact that majority of the states do not require helmet law. Missouri is surrounded by 8 states and 7 don't require helmets. And it seems that those death rates are no higher in those states from motorcycle crashes. And in fact, most people that ride motorcycles today, majority of them are doctors, lawyers, people that, and it doesn't mean you can't wear helmets. It just means that you can choose not to if you want to. And a lot of people that ride across Missouri have to try to stow a helmet, put it on while they're going through Missouri, then they take it off and go the rest of their route and not worry about it. But statistical analysis does not show that these people aren't without insurance. A greater portion that have disability insurance and health insurance and life insurance than the average population, because I think a lot of them probably are more economically able to afford that if they're buying a Harley. You know, a few people, we actually have some of our soldiers on base in Fort Leonard Wood, their only means of transportation is a motorcycle. They do not have a car. But a lot of people that ride motorcycles as a group, that's probably a very expensive hobby for them, quite
honestly. Yeah, I appreciate the fact that there's you know, one universe of people that would say helmets actually do make you safer, helmets prevent certain accidents from occurring that otherwise would occur. And I appreciate the fact that we can debate both sides of those statistics. I tend to fall down on the idea that, look, I'm an adult, I can make this decision, I have the freedom to choose to wear a helmet or not wear a helmet. And if it weren't for the fact that in that decision that person makes is also instilled in that decision is this known fact that if the worst case situation occurs, and my insurance doesn't cover everything, I don't have enough disability insurance, and I'm completely incapacitated, that society will come along and pick me up and take care of me. And so, you know, I look for amendments to say, look, you waive your right to do these things, to get these services if, in fact, someone can prove that your injury would have been avoided had you worn a helmet. Those are all federal programs, though. They're not state programs, so I couldn't get the right fit for it. But, you know, again, I know that the people that believe in this issue are passionate about this issue, and I think that's great. I understand where they're coming from, but when I spoke to them in the committee, I said, you know, understand that, you know, when you rely on government, that's what, to whatever degree you rely on, is when you start to give up a little bit of your freedom. So, anyway, I appreciate the inquiry, Senator.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Further discussion. Senator from the 14th, for what purpose do you rise?
I'd like to inquire of the Senator from Buchanan.
Senator from Buchanan, do you yield?
Yes, I do.
He does. Proceed.
I just wanted to talk to you just a little bit about this bill. I know that you're a doctor, and I wanted to see if you've seen any cases where people have been in an accident and they weren't wearing their helmet or any head protective.
Yes, I have. And what I can absolutely tell you is that if a person's in a motorcycle accident and they don't wear a helmet, their injuries are generally much more severe than if they were. In fact, that's borne out by statistics. And, you know, we were just heard about some statistics in the last exchange there. One statistic that I thought was really interesting was it said, what were the results when Arkansas amended its universal helmet law? And in Arkansas, motorcycle operator fatalities increased by 21% when they got rid of their law. And also, helmet use dropped from 97% before the repeal to 52%. And helmet use among injured motorcycle operators decreased from 55.8% in 1996 to 29.1% in 1998. And then emergency medical service data showed an increase in the number of injured motorcyclists, the number of motorcyclists with head injuries, and the proportion of all injured motorcyclists with head injuries after the law change. And, you know, this would just sort of be intuitive that that would happen. And I have to agree with the senator from the 24th. This is a liberty issue, and I completely understand the desire to maximize our personal liberty. I applaud the senator from Phelps for looking out for our individual liberty, but there is a tension that we need to respect and think about too, and that's the liberty of the unseen man, the man who's footing the bill, which is you and me when we pay our taxes and our insurance premiums.
I completely understand, and you know, this is not the first time this bill has come up. I know when you and I were in the House, this bill came up, and frankly, you know, I came from a different perspective on this legislation, and I have to admit, some time ago, I thought I was in support of it to a certain degree. You see, all of my uncles, every single one that I have, they ride motorcycles. And yeah, that's like either it is for their pure enjoyment or it's their main way of getting around. I remember when I was in middle school, there was a classmate of mine, Monique Hines, whose father was in a motorcycle accident and died. And it was quite devastating. And, you know, I remember that. And luckily, she and her mother are my constituents. But I know any time the issue of helmets or just safety comes up, they always talk about Mr. Hines, and who was an extraordinary person who just died. Now, what I will tell you is some years ago when this first came up, I called my Uncle Tony. And I said, okay, so what do you think about this? If you listen to radio, talk radio in St. Louis, most people know him by the name of Motorcycle Man. And he's pretty popular on all the different radio stations. And he's a little bit conservative and a little bit to the libertarian end. But he always talks about, you know, what he likes to do in the sun, which is to ride his motorcycle. And now he's of the belief that you have to be safe. And I want to disagree with the handler of the bill, too, because there are a couple of things that he said. He said most people have health insurance who also ride a motorcycle. And he also made an assumption that most people who have motorcycles are in a certain income bracket. Well, that's not true, because I know the members in my family are some of them are struggling folks, you know, so they're not in, I guess, that income bracket that automatically says that they have insurance that covers 150% of whatever may happen. It's not true. And I think just by saying that, you know, we're making some assumptions, and you know what you do when you make assumptions. And we shouldn't say that. And I'm purely speaking from my own experience in my family. So I believe that you should have a helmet. You should have safety gear intact. Far too often there are people who think that they're being safe, and all of a sudden they get into an accident and they're severely hurt. There's brain injury, and you know way more about brain injury than I do, but sometimes there's a loss of capacity and usage. So can you tell us about that?
Well, the thing about it is that it's absolutely true. I don't I don't believe that anybody in this room would disagree with this statement, but they might. I would be surprised if they did. But I believe that it's absolutely true that if you're not wearing a helmet when you're injured, you're more likely to sustain more severe injuries, and that those injuries are more likely to cost the taxpayers money.
Yeah, now, and I agree with you in that, and I think that you are going to talk about this a little bit longer, but here's what I have to say. I completely agree. If you are not going to wear a helmet and your insurance doesn't cover you, but you chose not to wear that helmet, then, you know, I think the state is off the hook. Maybe what we should add onto this bill is some kind of language that signs off any rights to having any state coverage.
Well, you know, I have such an amendment drafted, and I will intend to
offer
that.
I mean, because it is a
choice. I'd like to discuss maybe that a little
bit. It's a choice. It's not a right. It's a choice.
You know, according to the National Traffic Safety Administration, National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, which we call NHTSA, according to NHTSA, Missouri has saved about $78 million per every 100,000 registered motorcycles in 2008 because of its helmet law. Now, if everyone agrees that not wearing a helmet is likely to cost the taxpayers more money, then really what we ought to do, if we're responsible in considering this legislation, is try to figure out how much money is it going to cost Missouri, the state of Missouri, taxpayers, through their taxes, paying for Medicaid.
And it's not just like a one-time hit. It's not like
it's an ongoing hit.
It's ongoing. And so let's say the person is 22 years old. They're not wearing their helmet. And, you know, this person ends up not being able to walk for the rest of their lives. Now, should that be on the state? Probably not. I think you're correct. If that 22-year-old decided not to wear a helmet and sustains, you know, different things that happen to him or her, you know, we shouldn't have to pay for that.
I was a little bit frustrated with the fiscal note on this bill, which is zero. The fiscal note was zero. And, you know, I'm aware myself of many, many statistics that would show that if we pass this bill, it will result in costing taxpayers a lot more money. And the thing is that when the government takes money out of my pocket, it is extracting pure liberty from me. And the thing is that
for a choice.
If I have that
not
money,
a right. For a choice.
Right.
Not
if
a right.
I have money in my pocket, then I have the ability to spend that money on something that I want. And if I don't have the money by virtue of the government extracting it from me to pay for these other people's liberty, then I am having my liberty denied from me. And so this is a pure liberty versus liberty decision. And it's an important decision. And not only is my personal liberty affected, but our liberty as a legislative body is also affected, because if we're forced to take our resources and pay for people's increased brain injuries as a result of them exercising their liberty to ride their motorcycle without a helmet, then we don't have that ability to apply those resources to education or something else, or pay for some other person's disability that wasn't preventable, like this is.
Or children who have disabilities, who are born with disabilities, to families that do not have the insurance to cover all
right.
of the problems that exist with that child.
So if this helmet law was worth $78 million, which according to NHTSA, it was worth in 2008, that's $78 million of liberty that we collectively are losing.
That can go somewhere else.
Right.
And we're trying to balance our budget. Did you see the editorial in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch this morning? Talks about the Senate fixing all of the hilarious issues that the House put together in the budget. Did you see that by chance?
You know, I had a patient whose son died not wearing a seatbelt. And I know that his not wearing a seatbelt isn't the same as his not wearing a motorcycle helmet.
They're related, but, though. They're related.
But this patient sat in my office, and he said to me, "Oh, please, I wish that some police officer would have pulled him over and stopped him and made him put on his helmet. I would give anything to have my son back." He was 18 years old when he died on a gravel road. He was just driving along, maybe 40, 50, and he flipped his car and killed him. He didn't have a seatbelt on. And this father's anguish stays with me. It rings in my head. I can see his face. He had the most horrible expression as he sat there and cried profusely because of the loss of his son. And I think to myself, this isn't just about, you know, freedom to wear, to ride with no helmet. There's a human cost that will be paid here. Because I guarantee that if we pass this bill as written, that there will be people die. But that isn't the reason why I'm opposed to it. I mean, I have to say that if you want to ride your motorcycle with no helmet, you should be allowed to ride with no helmet, as long as I don't have to pay for your liberty. You agree?
I do agree. I absolutely agree. It's kind of crazy that I'm agreeing with you, but I have to tell you, I was sitting on a panel on Friday, and I mentioned your name to this group of people that I was speaking before, and I said, I know that he's Republican and from the other side, but he has a really great piece of legislation that I'm supporting, and that's your hands-up bill.
Well,
so I've been singing your praises back at home, and I said, I don't know what he was drinking.
I'm not on the other side. We're on the same side. We're both from Missouri.
Yeah.
You know, and we just come at it from a different angle.
Yeah, and sometimes we do agree. And I think on this point, I do agree with you. I don't think that we should have to pay for someone's injury when they made the choice to not wear a helmet.
You know, I'm planning to offer my amendment, which would just simply say that if you're not riding with a helmet on, that you will not be eligible for MoHealthNet services for such injury that you would have as
well. Well, I think there should also be like a contract. I mean, when you get your license for your motorcycle or tricycle or whatever we call it, you know, you should sign a contract that waives any access to state dollars.
Don't you think that...
Or anything that's...
Don't you think that it's reasonable, the position that one citizen should have the maximum liberty as long as it doesn't impact on another...
Infringe upon anyone else's
another
rights or
liberty.
Liberties. Absolutely.
I think that that's the way it ought to be. And the thing is that this doesn't go far enough, really.
It doesn't go far. I mean, I like the direction where your amendment is going, but I agree that it does not go far enough.
The reason is that if I have, like, State Farm insurance and somebody else rides their motorcycle without a helmet, it's going to jack up my insurance rates. It for sure is. But I can't really get at that here. You know, I guess we could say that you have to have insurance that's adequate in order to cover your expenses. But at least this stops the government-imposed, you know, taking away of my liberty by virtue of my taxes. And so the... You know, if this amendment went on, I would vote for the bill. I would. Because, you know, I would feel that that would be a reasonable compromise. If the amendment doesn't go on, there's no way I would be able to vote for this bill.
Do you think anyone would be opposed to your amendment?
Oh, yeah. I offered it in the House, remember? We were both in the House. You probably just don't remember.
No, I didn't get to pay as much attention to you in the House. Now I get
to
just hear praises and be happy.
I offered it in the House, and it went down. Like, I think I was, like, the only person to vote for
it. So then I'll end this inquiry, and then we'll see what happens with your amendment.
Well, I'd like to get a roll call on it.
I think you should get a roll call on it because, I mean, I think liberals such as myself.
Could you help me, like, maybe inquire of some others and maybe just make sure that we could get a roll call before I close on my amendment?
So I'm reminding you
just
now.
To help me just you know, some various.
I have to write a note to myself to ask for a roll call.
Well, no, that would be good. Okay. If you would do that. That would be good. And then if you can.
Or I can text it over to you.
Something, somehow or another, I want to get
that. So we don't miscommunicate.
Because I think it's very important, don't you?
I do, absolutely. You know what? And frankly, let me tell you, if there's any revenue that is gained by something like this, I'd like that revenue to go to people who are in need. You know, who are in serious need, who did not make a choice to get into an accident.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a whole bunch of more statistics here that we could talk about, but maybe we should save those for.
Well, let's save it for later. I'm interested to see how your amendment goes, and we'll go from there.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you so much. Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion. Senator from Buchanan, for what purpose do you rise?
I have an amendment.
Send your amendment forward.
My amendment has not been distributed. I would ask for a waiver of the reading and explain the amendment and promise not to close until the amendment has had an opportunity to be distributed.
Seeing no objection, the reading will be waived. We will not vote on it until everyone has a copy of the amendment. Would you care to explain your amendment?
Yes, I would. Mr. President, my amendment basically says that if, as a result of operating or riding a motorcycle or motor tricycle without protective headgear, a person 21 years of age or older sustains an injury, then such person shall not be eligible for MoHealthNet services under Chapter 208 for such injury. And as the members might have heard me discussing briefly a moment ago, it's my opinion that everyone should be able to exercise the maximum amount of freedom as long as it doesn't impact on their fellow citizens. And it is absolutely true that if you are not wearing a motorcycle helmet, you're more likely to sustain an injury that will cost the taxpayers more money. And that represents liberty. The money that we have to pay for that is liberty. You take it out of my pocket and you spend it for the other person's injuries, then I am not able to spend that money on something that I would want to spend it on. And there is a tension here. And I would ask my fellow senators to consider this tension, and as I said, I would vote for this. Mr. President, I would ask to inquire of the senator from Phelps.
Does the senator from Phelps yield?
I do.
He yields. You may inquire.
Senator, do you understand my amendment?
I understand what your amendment does. I don't support your amendment.
I didn't expect that you would, but at least do you understand the liberty, the trade-off here in liberty? Because there is no right or wrong answer. There is the liberty of those who are going to ride their helmet, they ride their motorcycle without a helmet, and then there's the liberty of all the taxpayers that are going to pay for them.
Hey, what about the person that's overweight? What about the person that smokes? We're going to eliminate them from Missouri HealthNet too?
Well,
in other words, where do you draw the line? Because your figures are saying that the fatality rates go way up, and I have a beautiful graph from the National Department of Transportation showing the fatality is much less in the choice states because they do a better job of education and they ride more defensively. Majority of the motorcycle riders are insured a lot more than people riding in cars are.
Hey, well, let's take those one at a time.
And
I mean, could we? Could we take them one at a time?
Let me give you one other statistic. No motorcycle helmet is protective past 13 miles per hour. So some people put on a helmet and feel like they're protected and ride stupidly, and sometimes they can't see either side. And, you know, we're not saying that you have to take the helmet off. It's up to you. It's your choice if you're more comfortable riding with the helmet. And that's how you've always ridden. That's what you should do. You have to admit those little skull caps that people ride that pass as a helmet are absolutely, they probably don't protect you for 5 miles an hour.
Okay, well, first of all, you made several.
Can't hear you.
I don't necessarily agree with them. For one thing, even
give your statistics, and I'm giving my statistics. It's absolutely 180 degrees different than your statistics. So,
well, I mean, you would admit, though, would you not, that if you don't wear a helmet, you're more likely to have a more severe injury?
No, I do not. Bear that out.
Really?
Really? What if your chin strap gets caught on something as you're skidding down the highway and jerks your head off?
Okay, now are
that
you,
didn't help you
are
much.
Suggesting that by speaking about this one possible thing of your chin strap getting caught, that you can extrapolate somehow?
No.
That there's not more serious injuries?
That was one example. I'm telling you that the statistics in Arkansas and Texas that are freedom of choice recently did not show an increase in fatalities and did not see an increase.
Well, where did you get your statistics? Because I got mine from NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety.
That's where mine came from?
Well, we must be getting different statistics.
The statistic that you talked about in Arkansas, the thing that you did not mention is when Arkansas modified their helmet law, that motorcycle registration went up by 50%.
15 or 50?
50.
50%.
Therefore, the fatality rate per 10,000 remained constant. There were more fatalities, but there were twice as many riders.
Okay. What about, would you agree that helmet use dropped after the repeal? I mean, that was the statistic.
Yes, most states they do.
And you also don't believe that the severity of the injuries is directly proportional to how few people wear helmet?
Most motorcycle accidents occur from cars pulling out in front of motorcycles, and when you're on a motorcycle and you challenge a car, the car's going to win every time. So that helmet that is protective up to 13 miles per hour, and you're running 60 broadsiding a car, I mean, don't tell me that helmet's going to help.
There is nothing going to save your life. But see, a lot of motorcycle injuries just involve laying over the motorcycle when it hits a piece of gravel, and the person goes skidding, and if their head whacks into something solid, they're going to be brain injured. I mean, that's what happens. And I guess what I'm trying to get at here is, you have a basic disagreement with me, truth, of whether or not wearing a motorcycle helmet causes you to be likely to have more injuries, or that the cost of the injuries
would
be...
You're absolutely right. I do disagree with you.
Disagree with that?
Yep.
I'm amazed that you disagree with that, Senator.
Well,
I really am.
I think the facts, by your logic, why don't we make children in buses wear helmets? They certainly don't have seat belts. Why don't we make kids buzzing around on scooters?
Well, do you think that we should... seat belt law?
Do what?
Should we eliminate the seat belt law?
No. I think that cars are built today on modern cars. I encourage my grandchildren to wear seat belts. I think you stay in the roll cage, you're better off with a seat belt.
Let me ask you this. Do you believe that if you wear a seat belt, that you're less likely to have injuries in the motor vehicle accident than if you don't?
I don't see the correlation between seat belts and...
Oh, I didn't ask you, but maybe there's no correlation. Just tell me, what do you think? You do think that you're less likely to have severe injuries?
If I wear a seatbelt every time I get in the car, no, I do not, because of...
But now, I just want to make sure that I understand you.
If I'm going to drive around a racetrack, I'm going to be in a roll cage, have a shoulder harness.
You absolutely do believe, Senator, that if you don't wear a helmet, you are not more likely to have expensive injuries than if you do. You believe that?
At 60 miles an hour, I don't think it makes.
What about it? What about at 15?
At 15, it might help you a little bit. Anything past that, the helmet's going to break.
What about just globally? What about just globally? If you climb onto a motorcycle and you're not wearing a helmet, do you believe that your injuries will be likely the same as a result as if you do have a helmet?
I think there's very little difference. I think statistics will bear me out on that.
Okay. Well, now that I have discovered that you and I are in total disagreement on this, and so if you were right, I would have to agree with you. I would have to vote for your bill the way it is. But I don't think you're right. I absolutely think that you're right. I think the statistics are absolutely clear. And for that reason, I've offered this amendment that would just simply say that if you're not wearing a helmet, you shouldn't get MoHealthNet benefits.
Well, and that's why I'm against your amendment. I don't know where you stop with that caveat. In other words, what else do you what do you put in all law? Who is by bad behavior by one group are you going to be eliminated from everything?
I have thought about this at length, trying to figure out what is the correct way to go here, and I've kind of come to the conclusion.
I think voting for my bill.
Well. The thing is that you have to look at everything on a case-by-case basis, obviously, I would think. But when you talk about food and somebody overeating or eating the wrong kind of food, therefore having a heart attack and costing the other taxpayers money.
Bad like me, yeah.
Right. In my mind, Senator, the difference is that you're talking about a basic life function there and that we all have to eat. You know, but see, riding a motorcycle without a helmet isn't life function. It's different than that. It's a basic life function that we all have to do. We all have to eat food. We all have to, drink water. It's different. It has a different set of implications. This one has an absolutely okay alternative thing that can be done, which is wear a helmet. I mean, everybody has to eat, and everybody has to make food choices, and the degree of intrusion into a person's life, telling them that they have to make food choices that don't cost their other fellow citizens money, is a much higher degree of intrusion than the intrusion of saying, you need to wear your helmet. They're basically different. And so that's why I think that it's okay to say that you have to wear your helmet, but it's not okay to say that you have to make good food choices.
Do you ride a motorcycle?
What?
Do you ride a motorcycle?
No, I don't. I feel like it's a neurosurgeon training tool. There's a saying, I've always had the saying, buy your kid a motorcycle for his last birthday. You know, it just doesn't excite me to do it. I do fly airplanes, though, I have to admit. I like to do that.
So we should probably eliminate you, then, from the MoHealthNet.
Well, I mean, I have airplane insurance and health insurance. You know?
So what do you say to the people that that has that?
That, I'm sorry,
that
say
has
again?
Insurance.
Say again?
Majority, like 89% of the people riding motorcycles have health insurance and disability insurance. The statistics, there's very few dollars spent on head injuries and motorcycle injuries and Medicaid in Missouri. Like very, very few, much less than car accidents.
Can I ask you, do you think that you're more, less, or the same likely to die if you're riding a motorcycle without a helmet?
I think that statistics show there's no difference because the helmet protects to 13 miles an hour. And that's listed on the helmet, the best one you can buy.
How can you, I'm just curious. I respect you, Senator, but how can you ignore the the statistics that say that Missouri, our helmet law saves 49 lives a year. In fact, they say South Dakota saves 4 lives a year, North Dakota 6, Nebraska 22. I mean, do you just like deny that those are correct?
I don't know how they could come up with those statistics.
Well, I guess what they've done is they've looked at states where there's helmet law and states where there's not a helmet law. And then, looking at those statistics, they have extrapolated that if there were not a helmet law in Missouri, 49 more people would die every year. Now, the thing about it is that some of those people are going to be taxpayers, and they are going to not pay taxes after they're dead. They're not going to contribute to the economy. They're not going to contribute to the GNP. They're not going to pay taxes. So the tax receipts of the state of Missouri would go down by something, and yet we have a zero fiscal note. I'm amazed. But the thing about it is that you want to at least admit that more people are going to die if we don't have a helmet law. I mean, don't you agree with that?
Well, this chart I'm showing you, you can't see it, but anyway, I have a chart. And it compares from 1978 up to 2002, and it's from the Department of Transportation and the National Transportation Safety Administration. And every year, with the exception of about 2 years, there are less deaths per rider, percentage of rider in choice states than there are in mandatory helmet states. That's the facts.
I would have to see that. I would love to see that. If that were actually true and that it didn't cost my fellow taxpayers money, I would vote for your bill, but I don't believe that. The statistics that I've seen are just overwhelming that more people are going to die and it's going to cost taxpayers more money as a result of this idea. I mean, just they're overwhelming. I just don't believe those statistics, Senator. But those statistics are the basis of the disagreement between us.
Yeah.
Not our philosophy is the same. We want liberty for our constituents.
Well, I do. I'm not sure you do.
I know you do. I know you do.
I mean, I don't know that your amendment is even constitutional. And I'm not sure the federal law will allow.
Listen, you're going to stand there and you're going to oppose my amendment. My amendment is going to fail. I know that. You know that. I know that. We all know it. Everybody in the room and listening on the internet knows it. My amendment's going to go down. That's okay. I will at least have tried to do what I felt was the right thing. And then you know what's going to happen. Your bill will probably pass. The governor will probably veto it if he's consistent, which I think he probably will be. This is all an exercise in futility. But, you know, let's do it.
All right. I agree with you. Vote no on this amendment and move on. Thank you.
Hey, I doubt that my amendment's going to be the only amendment. I mean, I'm surprised if there were other amendments. It could happen. Mr. President.
Senator.
To speak on my amendment.
Proceed.
Mr. President, I would vote for this bill if I believed the statistics of the senator from Phelps, but I don't believe those statistics. The statistics that I've seen from the federal government, from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration are very overwhelming and clear that doing this is going to cost the taxpayers more money, and more people are going to die as a result. And I just really would hope that, you know, my amendment would go on. If my amendment goes on, I'll vote for the bill. If my amendment doesn't go on, I'm going to be voting against the bill. And with that, Mr. President, I renew my motion.
Well, Senator from the 10th was seeking recognition.
Okay.
For what purpose does the senator rise?
To inquire of the senator from Buchanan.
Does the senator yield?
Yes.
Proceed.
Definitely.
Three senators on the floor. For what purpose is the senator from Franklin? seek recognition.
Before my colleagues begin or continue with the debate, I would seek unanimous consent for introduction of special guests.
Hearing no objection, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. This afternoon, we have a great homeschool family with us from Washington, Missouri, the Smith family. We've got Scott Smith, Lynette Smith, and their son, Adam Smith, if they would all stand over on the side. And, Mr. President, I would ask that Adam would be made a page for the day to serve without compensation.
Come down front, Adam. And we're delighted. Let's welcome the guests of the Senator from Franklin. And we're delighted to have Adam serving as a page for the day. Senator, proceed.
President, Senator, you and I have had a quick discussion about this. I think I told you that in the past I've actually voted in favor of this legislation and that I tend to lead on the side of the individual liberty issues, but I'm also supportive of your amendment. I did have a couple of questions, though. This is limited just to MoHealthMed, is that correct?
Yes.
I guess my concern is that where does this leave folks who get their insurance through a private insurance pool?
Well, generally, a person who would have insurance would use up their insurance before going on MoHealthNet. I think that under the new federal health care law, there's supposed to not be any maximum lifetime benefit on health care.
So in that situation, then, if someone did make the choice to not wear a helmet on the highway, they got into an accident, they were injured, and their insurance had to kick in, then essentially it would be those of us that are also playing into that private insurance pool that would be paying for that person's decision. Similar to the folks that are smoking right now or eating only McDonald's or whatever. Is that correct?
I'm not sure that I heard you completely.
Okay.
A lot of noise in the chamber, and I wasn't
sure. Able to hear. My question is, if an individual is insured through a private insurer,
yes,
and he or she makes the decision to ride on the highway without a helmet, they get into an accident, and they have a catastrophic accident that leads them to have to max out or have whatever the law will be as far as unlimited benefits under their health plan. If they have a private plan, it's basically those of us who are in their private plan that are eventually going to be paying for their health costs. Is that how that works?
Yeah, I think
so. Is there any way to add in to the MoHealthNet piece? I don't know how in the world you do it.
It's just difficult. I'm open to suggestions if you can make my amendment better.
Well, I just, right now, can insurance companies, can they charge a higher rate for smokers than non-smokers?
They can with some restrictions. In fact, I actually handled the bill that changed that. They can with certain restrictions. But, yeah, they could charge people who ride motorcycles more. Absolutely. They do that all the time. I have to pay a higher rate for my life insurance because of the fact that I fly airplanes.
Okay, so that's something that the private market can handle then. So if they decide as private health insurers or life insurers that they wanted to give an upcharge.
The private market could offer a product in which they say that none of the people here are insured riding on their motorcycle. And then I could access that if I wanted or if the market would bear that. I doubt that they would, but they could.
And then, do you happen to know in any of the states where there is no restriction on helmets or that people are allowed to ride without helmets? Has any other state done this where they've taken folks out of the health or their Medicaid?
To answer your question, you mean as to whether they have taken those people out of their Medicaid plan?
Yeah.
No, I am not aware of any other states who have done what I am proposing.
Have any other states done anything about the cost on taxpayers if someone is injured while not wearing a helmet?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. And then my only other question is, do you think that we'd be in violation of federal law if we did this without getting some sort of waiver from the feds?
I don't know.
It seems to me that if we're doing something completely different than all the other states, that we might get crossways with them, and I don't know that now's the time for us to be getting crossways with the feds on Medicaid, but...
No, the fact of the matter is, Senator, that I know, that, you know, I've come to a realization that I could stand here and talk ad infinitum because of I'm so violently opposed to this bill, but I don't intend to do that. But I would like to make the point that there is a liberty issue here, so I offered this amendment. The amendment's going to fail, the bill's going to pass, the governor's going to veto the bill. That's what's going to happen. So whether or not this is constitutional will never make it to a court of law. It just isn't going to.
I understand, Senator. I'm in favor of your amendment. I'm also in favor of the bill. Maybe I'm a rare.
I think that it's
drew
probably
a Venn diagram of the Senate. I may be standing there by myself, but
it very well might happen that if the bill were to pass with this on there, that a court would find it unconstitutional, possible. But at least I get everybody to think about the question of liberty and whether or not, you know, one person's liberty is offset by everyone else's liberty.
Okay, thanks, Senator. I appreciate that.
Does any other senator from the 14th?
President, I'd like to inquire of the senator from Buchanan.
Does the senator from Buchanan yield?
Yes.
Proceed.
Okay, so I really just enjoyed your exchanges because it gave me an opportunity to look at some things. First of all, I think that there is an argument of statistics going on here, and it's now becoming a debate about statistics and common sense. And I really think this is all about common sense. I think you are on the side, as well as I am, of common sense. Now, statistics can say anything.
You ever heard the saying that liars figure and figures lie?
Yeah, I mean, but what I know about statistics is you can make them whatever you want them to be. That's the reality of statistics. Some of the numbers that I'm looking at from the same source, I think we're all looking at the same source, which is this association, and my statistics say something completely different from the same source. So, I mean, I think common sense is what outweighs this entire debate. And, you know, what's interesting, what you have not talked about, is what the fiscal note says in this regard. And there's an estimate from DHSS saying that at least 70 additional head injury cases a year if this helmet law is repealed for people under for people 21 years and older. And then it comes out, you're looking at the Monet services, it can end up being $94,000 or $156,000. And, you know, this time that we just had also allowed me to go through all of the witnesses who were against this bill, our own highway patrol. You know, I'd rather our highway patrol deal with crime instead of dealing with, you know, someone who has a head injury because they chose not to wear a helmet. You have the
Highway Patrol is against this bill.
The Highway Patrol is against this bill.
Because they know. They see the injuries.
And see, here's what's also interesting. The Missouri Hospital Association, they may not get their money back for helping out a person. And that brings me back to this point where the sponsor said that 80% of people who ride motorcycles have health insurance. And I'd like to know where that comes from. I mean, seriously, if we're going to state statistics, then we need to also state what the source is. And I have not heard where the source is where 80% of people who have motorcycles have health insurance. I can tell you, out of seven uncles that I have, I can tell you at least two of them don't have health insurance. Two of them don't. So that's my own family. You know, two of them don't have health insurance. So let's get down to the nitty-gritty on this. So then you have, oh, look at here, State Farm, AIA, Travelers, MIC. These are all insurance companies that are opposed to this legislation as well. And look, Missouri College of Emergency Physicians, Missouri State Medical Association, Missouri Psychiatric Association, the Missouri Hospital Association again, Property Casualty Insurers Association of America, Missouri Motorcycle Safety Program. So there's a gentleman by the name of Michael Davis who is part of the motorcycle safety program. Then you have the Brain Injury Association of Missouri. All of these organizations who are obviously against this bill. Obviously against this bill, and then we have a fiscal note that starts out as $94,000, and that's on the low end. I mean, these are 70, imagine a 22-year-old times 70 per year. They live there, let's just say they live till 75 years old, and then they take in part of Monet. So let's just do 5 years. So let's do 5 times 70, okay? And then let's multiply that by 65 years. Let's multiply, or let's take that away. So 65 minus 22, what is that, 43? So let's add 43 years and 70 people times 5 years. How much money are you willing to spend?
And
here's another point that I have a problem with, Senator, is that I do believe that seat belts are similar to helmets because they all support safety.
It's the same argument. I mean, I've got patients who don't want to have to wear a seatbelt.
For the statement to be made that there is no correlation between a seatbelt and a helmet is false. To make that assertion
is
absolutely false.
It's absolutely just intuitive that the two issues are similar. And my experience as a physician bears it out. And why do you think the Highway Patrol has imposed this bill? Because their experience bears it out. It's just the way it is. Just I'm frustrated at what's being said.
Well, I'm kind of frustrated about it, too. And, I mean, I'm glad that we were able to get into this conversation very early
Thank you, and
the second half. Because you know what? We're still not talking about job creation.
Don't forget to ask.
We're still not discussing job creation. We are still not dealing with the $500 million of a shortfall that we have. We're talking about people wearing helmets who are going to spend.
On, please keep it down so we can hear the debate.
Thank you, Mr. President. We have no clue how much the state's going to spend from these 70 people who the DHSS thinks is going to end up getting into an accident and having a head injury.
It will be many millions of dollars. But like I said, the governor's going to veto it anyway.
Yeah, but here's the point that I'm trying to make. Okay, so at the end of session, we were debating the discrimination bill. So we all know, you know, the big elephant in the room. We all knew that the governor was going to veto it. Okay, duh. So why are we spending time on this and we know the governor is going to veto it? That's a good, I guess we didn't learn the lesson the first half of session. I guess we have to continue in the lesson. Second half. We're not talking about education. We're not talking about jobs. We're not talking about the budget. But we're wasting time because we're talking about something that is going to cost us, one, money, and two, something that's going to be vetoed ultimately. So why are we standing here right now talking about a bill that's going to be vetoed by the governor? Why waste our time? Because I can tell you, the 16, 17, 20% of those people living in my district who are unemployed, they'd much rather me talk about job development and training and not helmets.
You know the answer to the question. No, the answer.
Now, tell me what the answer is, because I seriously
don't. There's one of two possibilities. Possibility number one is that there's always the hope that the governor will sign the bill. And possibility number two.
Okay, that's where common sense comes into play. Common sense has a very easy definition. And common sense tells us that obviously it's going to be vetoed just like it was before.
Because nothing's different. And possibility number two is that we want to lay a bill on the governor's desk, knowing that he'll veto it, because there will be a political benefit from him vetoing it. That's what it is.
Okay, so,
one of those two possibilities.
Well, you know, I'm sorry, but I didn't think being in this chamber was about playing politics.
I dream of the Road Riders.
Passing a good budget. I didn't know that we were playing politics in here. I'm sorry, we're not in fifth grade anymore.
Oh, no. Don't
be. Not fifth grade.
Politics in here. Come on.
jumping jacks. Well, why don't we just start, you know, doing the hula hoop? Since we're playing games, let's just do the hula hoop. Let's see how many senators can hula hoop for 5 minutes or more. That's a game.
Yeah.
So we're playing the game of who's going to have ownership over, you know, this conversation with a small segment of people in the state, rather than try to figure out how we're going to create jobs, how we're going to fix the with this Turner fix, how we're going to deal with the foundation formula, you know, how we're going to deal with women that are being raped, how are we going to deal with all of these other issues that are very important, and we're here standing or sitting and talking about something that's going to be vetoed. Seriously? Seriously? Oh. You have nothing else to put talk about on this calendar? Is there nothing else to talk about on this calendar than something that's going to be vetoed?
Senator, we can't know why things happen. We can only surmise. And we have to continue the process with full expectation that we're doing the right thing. And
well,
that's what
I think you and I are doing the right thing about it right now in terms of talking about this foolishness.
Okay.
I think we're doing the right thing.
Well, I'm ready to let them vote on my amendment if you'll ask, you know, the question.
Mr. President.
Senator.
I'd like to get a roll call on this amendment.
If you're joined by a sufficient number, Senator, you will have your roll call. Does any senator wish to be heard on the motion of the senator from Buchanan? Senator from 15th?
Wire the senator from Buchanan.
Does the senator yield? Proceed.
Okay, I wanted to ask you, I understand, and I think you made an interesting argument, the liberty versus liberty matchup here during March Madness. But the question I have, too, and it's not the same as the senator from the 10th, but what happens when someone's riding a motorcycle but they don't have insurance?
Normally, they would be taken care of by MoHealthNet. They would be.
Well, if I...
But under,
well,
under
not if you're not Medicaid eligible.
I'm sorry?
Not if you're not Medicaid eligible. If you are somebody that makes... You're a recent college graduate, you got a great job in some company, you're making $60,000 a year, you want to blow off some steam, you buy a motorcycle, you don't wear a helmet, and you get injured, you have a serious head injury, where do you go? You go to the ER, right?
Well, first of all, you go to the ER,
right,
and they will take care of you because they have to. They will send you a bill,
right,
which you will either pay or not pay. If you don't pay, they'll take you to court. You know, maybe you'll have a lawsuit against the other driver to try to recover damages, try to pay for all of your injuries. That may or may not happen. But ultimately, if you're not able to work, if you're permanently and totally disabled, and assuming that you don't have disability insurance or some other form of insurance, you will eventually fall onto the burden of the other taxpayers.
Well, not exactly. You fall under the burden of other people who pay for private health insurance, correct?
Because if you have
that cost, that cost is spread out then in the aggregate, correct? It's
right.
It's not the taxpayer. I mean, you're a taxpayer, but you're also a private policy holder.
Right.
What I'm getting at is, I understand, I appreciate your amendment, but it doesn't exactly get at the full universe of what you're trying to get at.
No,
correct?
It doesn't. And the thing about it is that if I'm I'm a person who is a random citizen, there's a good chance that I don't have the same insurance company as you do if you're the one who doesn't ride the motorcycle. So there's a good chance that your behavior won't affect me. And yes, there's the chance, there's a smaller chance that I will be covered by the same policy and that your behavior will affect me. And yes, you're right, my bill does not, or my amendment, I mean, does not get at that.
Right, because what's also interesting is you do the Liberty versus Liberty March Madness bracket here.
Now, what do you mean by March Madness?
I'm talking about versus. You're talking about somebody playing against somebody. The NCAA tournament, you may or may not be aware, is being held right now.
No, I am not.
Yeah, come on, tell me you're not that out of touch, Senator.
I'm just
come
not
on
familiar.
All right. I didn't bring that up to bust your chops. I thought you knew that
we
were in the middle of March Madness.
No, I'm really bad about
okay
that. You caught me.
sorry. Be that as it may, it wasn't a trap. But what I also find interesting, now you can appreciate what I'm saying, the March Madness Liberty versus Liberty matchup, which, oh, by the way, is also University, Liberty University. But we have made a statement in this state that we don't believe it's the federal government's role to require or mandate that every individual purchase private health insurance, that violates some semblance. And from my perspective, when we talked about on this floor in 2010, as a lawyer took a legal approach, the Commerce Clause has been broadly expanded since the 1930s and 40s, once the switch in time to save nine, once the court packing plan was on the table, all of a sudden the Supreme Court that had been resisting the New Deal legislation flipped. And since then, you've had this ever-expanding reach of congressional and federal authority based on the Commerce Clause. And the rationale, of course, is that because commerce reaches so many different areas of our lives, that because of the Commerce Clause, you're able to regulate. But the interesting thing about the health care law, which will be decided now in about 2 months, does that reach extend to regulating non-activity? What I mean by that is somebody not doing something. Can the Commerce Clause be so broad as to require people to do something because they're not doing something?
Right. That's exactly right. You know, one of the funniest things I heard was that the Supreme Court of the United States said that you could regulate beekeeping in California because the bees would fly across state lines in gathering the nectar for their honey.
Well, I suppose,
yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's an interesting theory.
It is, but you're absolutely right. And this is a behavior, though. This is a behavior. And, you know, we do require people who drive cars to have automobile insurance.
Right. I guess what I'm getting at is your argument that taxpayers shouldn't be on the hook for somebody making irresponsible decisions extends well beyond just MoHealthNet. In the sort of an imperfect, you know, amendment to a larger problem is to say that when somebody who is uninsured or underinsured for that matter, but let's just talk about uninsured, gets in one of these acts, that cost is spread out over all the folks who have insurance because ultimately the hospital's going to get paid. You know,
only because of the EMTALA law. I mean, if it weren't for the EMTALA law, the hospital would not get paid. You know, my feeling is that a person should make their bed and lie in it. They should live and be subject to the decisions that they make. And I always put it as the hot stove scenario. When you're a little kid, your mom says, now don't touch the stove because you'll get burned. And the little kid goes up and touches the stove, gets burned, and goes, ow, I'm not going to touch the stove anymore. And the smart kid sees the other kid get burned and doesn't touch the stove to begin with. But the thing about the don't touch the stove is that the penalty is inherent in the behavior that you're trying to stop.
Well, and I guess the purpose of my inquiry, and I'm not trying to hold up the bill, is to ask why not. If that is your thinking, and I'm still thinking through how I view your amendment, but if that is your reasoning as to why others should not pay for that bad behavior, why does your amendment stop at MoHealthNet? Why doesn't it extend to the broader universe of everyone?
It's because it would make my amendment, which is, by the way, a futile effort, much more complicated. And you know, one of the things that we, the legislature, can control is MoHealthNet. It's much more difficult to control the insurance.
So what you're saying is you don't know the implications or how to exactly get at the larger issue.
Right. And not only that, but if it were something that people were concerned about, the insurance industry could offer insurance products that would take the problem
away. Well, in the individual market, for the group market, I'm not so sure, because that cost necessarily is spread out over, you know, with the averages. Actuarially, you're taking, when they're writing that policy, the actuaries that, you know, I have a brother-in-law that is, and I don't understand what they do, but they know, you know, the number of folks on average that ride motorcycles, and then those, and that's within a subset that don't ride, and that's all included in the group rate. Now, if you went to get an individual policy, the cost would be significantly higher if you ride a motorcycle versus don't ride a motorcycle. So right. That's easily dealt with in the marketplace.
Right, and the market is very complicated in that way, and I didn't have it in me to address that in this amendment. But as I said, this at least forces us to think about the liberty issue, and it gets probably to a large chunk of the liberty problem. And I will vote for the bill if this amendment passes.
Okay. Thank you for the inquiry.
Does any other senator wish to be heard? Senator from St. Francois.
Mr. President, could I inquire the senator from McKinney?
Does the senator yield? Proceed.
Appreciate this amendment. I believe there should be some responsibility there, but and I'm going to go ahead and support your amendment. But
awesome.
I do support the ability to ride without, but I just thought it was interesting that you think it should be the government's responsibility to force these people to wear helmets, but not have the government monitor if they illegally buy narcotics.
Right. You're talking about I knew you were going to
but that's
ask
okay.
This.
Thank you for the inquiry.
You're welcome.
You heard. Senator from Phelps.
Yes, I would urge my colleagues to vote no on this amendment.
Thank you, Senator. Does any other senator wish to be heard? Seeing none, the senator from Buchanan is recognized to close.
I close.
The senator renews his motion on adoption of Senate Amendment Number 1. A roll call has been qualified for. Secretary, call the roll on the amendment.
Senators Brown, Callahan, Chappelle Nadal, Crowell, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Engler, Goodman, Green, Justice, Keaveney, Kehoe, Krause, Lager, Lamping, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Munslinger, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Ferguson, Richard, Ridgway, Roop, Schaaf, Schaefer, Schmidt, Stouffer, Wasson, Wright-Jones.
Senator from the first. Senator from Howell. Senator from the 8th. Senator from the 13th. Senator from 7th. Senator from Lawrence. Senator from Jefferson. Senator from the 2nd. Senator from Polk. Senator from Franklin. Senator from Boone. Senator from Cape Girardeau. By your vote of 14 aye, 18 no, the amendment is defeated. Does any other senator wish to be heard on the motion of the senator from Phelps? The senator from the 4th.
To inquire the senator from Phelps.
Does the senator yield? He yields, you may inquire.
Thank you, Senator. Before we get started, you're probably educated enough. Do you remember who Wrong Way Corrigan was?
I did not understand.
Wrong Way Corrigan.
I do not know.
He was a famous aviator, and your discussion with the senator from Buchanan reminded me of him. He was a guy that took off from New York to go to California and landed in Ireland. And
made me think of the senator from Buchanan being wrong Lake Oregon. I would like to, I'm going to tell you, it's already been distributed. I have an amendment on your bill.
I read through it.
It's a pretty basic amendment. I have a bill pending. It's a public safety thing. It's not any more infringing on personal liberties. All it's doing is raising the seatbelt fine from $10 to $50 to get people to pay attention. I would imagine that when people make a choice whether to put a helmet on or not put a helmet on, they're paying attention and they're cognizant of their actions. What my amendment would do is, I think if people have a big enough hammer, they'll start to think twice and take a little personal responsibility.
It's getting very loud in the Senate chamber. Could we please turn the volume down or remove your conversations to the side or back galleries? Proceed, Senator.
Thank you. I'm going to offer my amendment, and I hope to have your support on it.
I won't support the amendment, and I'll tell you why. And it's kind of convoluted, I guess. But right now, I don't want to raise any fees or any more additional fines on people during the economy that we're in. And I think that the one group of people that's left out on this bill would be children on school buses. And I know that my schools can't afford to equip school buses with safety belts at this time. So I can't very well support the amendment when I think it's leaving out a large group of people that would probably gain the most from this.
Well,
and I don't support the fee increase. Sorry.
If we could talk about that a little bit, it's not really a fee increase. I mean, I would prefer that we not raise a nickel with it. That everybody just put on their seatbelt, right?
Right.
And it's not a primary offense. It's still a secondary offense. So they're going to have to get, the driver's going to have to get pulled over for doing something else.
Right.
So all this is doing is raising public awareness, same as your seat, or same as your helmet, Bill, and personal liberty. And, you know, these are the consequences of not obeying the law.
Right. And I appreciate your position. I understand your position. And at this time, I will have to vote no on the amendment. But I understand and appreciate your position.
And it specifically doesn't address school buses. It's strictly passenger cars.
I know. And that's what I think that we need. I think that needs to be addressed. You know, every time, here the other day, a school bus just rolled over, which is not a bad accident. Kids were banged up from one end to the other. And, you know, is it better for them to be strapped in seats? I don't know on school buses, but it seems like they shouldn't be bouncing around in there like little projectiles. And I can't put that extra charge on my schools right now. They simply can't afford it in my district. And I think they should be included if we're going to do it.
How can they? Well, that's a whole different debate. How can you not afford the safety of your people that you're in charge of?
I understand. I understand your point. But we are struggling desperately in outstate Missouri to pay the diesel fuel bill right now to keep buses running a huge distance. In some of my districts, they're picking kids up over a huge geographical area, and they're really having a hard time right now.
Oh, and I'm well aware of that, and that's why the school buses aren't in here. You know, the seatbelt deal in the passenger cars, most of the people that get, I won't say most, a significant portion of the people that get killed in a car accident is because they get they don't get killed in the accident, they get ejected out of the car.
Right.
Now, in Missouri, in outstate Missouri, it's $79.50 fine for littering, for throwing your beer can out the window.
Right.
But it's $10 when your friend goes sailing out. That doesn't seem equitable.
You know, and I think, I mean, from what I see traveling around, it seems like that most people do wear seatbelts anymore. I think that program has been a pretty good program that people have paid attention to. And I think that, you know, and you do hear, I think the senator from Buchanan had the example where a child was not fastened properly and died in a vehicle accident. But, you know, I just see very few people in my area that don't have kids and themselves strapped in anymore.
Well, Missouri is about 83%. We're one of the lowest in the country.
Yeah. No, I take that back. I think we're about 78%. I think the national average is about 83%. We're significantly below the average. And what we're doing is we're killing the kids. It's the parents, like you said, that are buckling in. It's the teenagers that aren't doing it.
Right.
And they're the ones that really, $50 is a lot of money. So if we buckle down on the teenagers, all we're doing is killing our kids.
Yeah. You know, on our farm, we have tractors that we farm with, and we have kids that work there. And these are cab tractors, and all the tractors are equipped with rollover cabs. And number one rule is if you work for us, you wear your seatbelt. Now, I'm the only one that doesn't in the tractor, but staying in the cab is going to protect you. But that is our rule. I understand your passion. Like I say, I don't want to see the fine increase that much at this time. And you're too nice a guy to fight with.
Thank, Thank you, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from the 4th.
I have an amendment.
Send the amendment forward, please.
Thank you.
Madam Secretary, please read the amendment.
I'm sorry. I would ask for a waiver. It's been distributed.
Seeing no objection, the reading will be waived. It has been distributed, Senator. Is that right?
Yes, Mr. President.
Would you care to explain your amendment?
Yes, it's a public safety issue. It's all it does is raise the seatbelt fine in Missouri from $10 to $50, trying to bring awareness on buckling up for safety. Missouri lags behind almost every other state in the country in seatbelt compliance, and this is trying to bring it to a forefront. With that, I'll answer any questions.
The senator from the 4th moves the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 2. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from the 1st, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Could I inquire the senator from Phelps?
Senator from Phelps, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator, for yielding. If I could just get a little clarification here on the senator from the 4th amendment. First of all, you spoke against the amendment. Is that correct?
I did.
Okay. And what the amendment would do is actually change the current fine in statute for not wearing your safety belt from $10 to $50?
That's exactly right.
Is that what it does?
That's my understanding.
Okay. And then I guess my third question would be, it doesn't look like it goes into the same chapter, and it looks like it would be an additional topic. Wouldn't this be a Hammerschmidt problem for your piece of legislation?
It is for me.
Okay. All right, Senator. I appreciate it. I'm with you, brother.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you, Mr. President.
We refer to each other as senators on the floor. Senator from the 1st. Senator from the 8th, what purpose do you rise?
Raise a point of order.
State your point.
Mr. President, this amendment goes beyond the scope and the title of the underlying bill.
Point of order has been called. Does anybody desire to be heard on the point of order? The point of order will be referred to the President Pro Tem. Does any senator desire to be heard on the point of order? Senator from the 8th, for what purpose do you rise?
I withdraw my point of order.
The point of order has been withdrawn. Further discussion on Senate Amendment Number 2. Senator from the St. Francis, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I would call for roll call.
Do you have four other members standing? There will be a roll call on Senate Amendment number 2. Further discussion on Senate Amendment number 2.
Mr. President.
Senator from the 11th.
What person? Mr. President. Could I inquire of the Senator from the 4th, Mr. President?
Senator from the 4th, do you yield?
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from the 4th, do you yield? He does. Proceed.
Thank you. Senator, I just wanted to make sure this part on line 3 to the regulation of motor vehicles with penalty provisions. You're striking all said lines, and then what you're inserting that. I'm on lines 2 and 3, right?
Yes.
On page 1. Okay, and then the practical effect of all this.
Senator from Franklin. Cell phones are not to be used to receive phone calls on the floor. Senator from the 11th, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. So the practical effect of your amendment is you're just going from $10 to $50 on that, right?
That's correct.
Striking all said lines and inserting the through the regular. And then is this current law on line 12 about the United States Postal Service?
Yes.
Okay, so you're just inserting 307.178 and then changing the 10 to 50.
That's exactly what we're doing.
Okay, all righty. Thank you, Senator.
Further discussion. Senator from the 14th, what purpose do you rise?
President, I'd like to inquire of the Senator from the 4th.
Senator from the 4th, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Did we ever resolve if he changed the title of your bill with your amendment?
He withdrew the point of order.
So I guess there's some information that I'm looking at in terms of the usage of seatbelts in Missouri. Where would you say we are as a state in terms of usage in comparison to national statistics?
We're below the national average, significantly below the national average.
Okay. So how many tickets are given each year in the state based on an individual not wearing their seatbelt?
Well, I've got that in my office. It's what happens a lot is, and the statistics are a little bit misleading. The seatbelt is the secondary ticket. What happens is a person gets a ticket for speeding, and if you're not wearing a seatbelt, they get a ticket for that. What clouds the picture a little bit is so many times the seatbelt is violation is stricken because of a recommendation from the prosecutor when they negotiate on the first ticket. So it's pretty hard to get a good feeling on what the total number of convictions are for seatbelts.
Well, it looks like according to the Missouri State Highway Patrol, there are approximately 58,000 tickets issued year for the seatbelt infraction. And of that, there are 20,000 that render a guilty verdict. And the fine currently is at 10, and the total collected revenue right now is $204,000 from individuals not wearing their seatbelts.
That sounds right. Of the tickets that we write, we collect on about a third of them.
So, I think there's some who are losing track of what you're actually trying to do, which is a good thing, and it's a safety issue. Can you tell me, in your movement to adopt this amendment, are you also trying to change behavior?
Oh, that's the whole point. That's the whole point of the amendment is to change perception and make people more aware of the consequences of not putting on their seatbelt.
And would you say that the evidence that is currently collected on this issue, whether or not it has reduced seatbelt rates, or has it reduced the number of people who don't wear their seatbelts?
More enforcement, more education increases the usage of seatbelts. That's correct.
Okay, so in 1998, 1999, there were several surveys that were conducted, I guess, throughout the state and dealt with the, I'm on your third bullet on your first page, I think, if we're looking at your memo. Okay, I'm on the third bullet under the question, do higher fines result in higher safety belt usage? I guess the question was posed, if you had a $30 fine, you know, would the number of people driving with seatbelts on increase?
I would say, sure, it would probably increase. But will it increase enough to get it where we think we need to be? I'm not sure.
So here's a philosophical question here. Do you think it is the state's job to raise public awareness on safety, whether or not it's wearing a helmet or if it is wearing a seatbelt?
Definitely. It's,
do you believe it is our job?
We build the highways.
Yeah.
We build the highways, we maintain the highways, we license people to drive on them. We ought to be educating them how to be safe on them.
And if we did not incorporate that public awareness aspect, do you think that we would be doing our job as public servants or agencies if we didn't highlight some of the problems that exist if one does not take certain safety measures into practice on an ongoing basis?
These are your constituents and my constituents that are needlessly being killed in Maine for not wearing their seatbelts, and everybody else's constituents.
So, you know, you've been coming up and down the highway for, what, 5 years now?
Three years
now? I've been doing it for 12 years. This is my 12th year going up and down the highway. And I have to tell you that, you know, when I... First of all, every time I see a car on the side of the road, I always have a quick 10-second prayer that I have for the person or the people who are on the side of the road, because, you know, sometimes you don't always get rescued, and that would be a sad situation. But, you know, there are, even today when I was coming on up, there's this truck that was going between the side and the primary lane, and I was a little bit nervous, and I actually, you know, went down about 12, 15 miles per hour just based on the behavior of a certain truck driver. And, you know, I practice wearing my seatbelt all the time, because the number of people that are hurt or who die or have the potential of being hurt or die is enormous. You know, and I hope that everyone takes a personal responsibility in trying to be safe on their own and also be safe for others.
Well, and, you know, don't forget, when we say people get in an accident and they're not wearing their seatbelt, an accident doesn't necessarily involve getting in, you know, striking another vehicle. A lot of people run off the road. They just swerve. And, you know, that's where they go through the windshield or the door opens and they fly out of the car.
Have a slight ice storm, just a slight one. In fact, let me give you an example. There was a gentleman by the name of Greg Barnes who worked for former Governor Holden. And, you know, when we're going down 54 towards Kingdom City and you do that turn to the left, and the miles per hour goes down to 60,
mm-hmm.
and you're like maybe 3 miles outside of Kingdom City going towards St. Louis. I remember there's a storm during the Holden administration, and his car actually slid and he was wearing his seatbelt, but his car slid and then tumbled down that ramp, and you know it's pretty dangerous right there. And I think even on dry days, it's, you know, worth it to slow down on that curve because it could be so dangerous. I also remember a former representative, I want to say Representative Ford, from St. Louis City. He's from your parts of town. And he, this is a long memory, but I remember being a staffer, and he got into an accident coming towards Jeff City at that section between Holt Summit and the bridge. And so he was like going way too fast and got into a car accident. And so obviously wearing your seatbelt does matter, and it does provide a safety benefit to a person. And so I think you're absolutely right in the direction that you're going, because safety, it incorporates helmets. It also incorporates, you know, seat belts. Even in my community now, you know, I have a very Jewish community. You know, one of the things that the kids in eighth grade at Torah Prep talk about is wearing reflective gear at night. Now, in our neighborhood, there are a lot of people who go to synagogue, walk to synagogue at night. They go up and down Delmar. We've talked about this before, mm-hmm. where there have been three people that I know of who have died, all Jewish, going to synagogue, walking to synagogue. So my eighth grade girls at Torah Prep, they want a state, it's so cute, they want a state law that requires everyone who's walking or exercising at night to wear a reflective gear. And they have a really good point with that. And I told them, let's talk to our municipality about it. What the girls don't understand is that it actually costs money. But the preventive costs, I mean, saving lives is very important, you know. And in our community, it's very, very, very important because we have a segment of the population that, because of their religious values and practices and norms, they walk wherever they go, minus a couple of exceptions. But they walk. And we have Base Abraham, we have Aguda Israel, we have our Young Israel, and this is just on Delmar.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if you didn't have some religious objection to putting everybody in orange vests.
Let me tell you another thing about my community. In France, there were three or four kids who were, or families, individuals who were shot outside of a Jewish community school. And when I read that this morning, all that I thought was that our alarm for our community just went up at least 30 notches.
I bet.
Because anything that happens, you know, especially targeting the Jewish community, especially living in what I like to call Little Israel, we have to be cognizant. And what's beautiful about our community, it doesn't matter if you're black, white, Jewish, or if you are ultra-conservative or reform, we care about safety. And I've talked about safety in our police officers in my conversation on the floor before. And when it comes to our lives being at risk, when it comes to that, let me tell you, I know that you have a great police department, but I know the University City Police Department is pretty good, too. And they are always cognizant of our safety and are always around when things like the situation in France happen. They're always around looking at what is going on and who is driving where and who's doing certain things. And that's something that I'm really proud about in my community. But, you know, when we wear our seatbelts, I think about it. It's not a second thought. It's, you know, let me put on my seatbelt. You know, let me make sure it's not twisted around. I'm going to put on that seatbelt, and I'm going to make sure that I'm safe from my end. Because you know what? We never know. It's, you know, my mom always said you have to always try to be as aware as possible, but we're not always 100%, and hopefully we'll stop distracting distracted driving. I've tried to change that habit with the little earpiece that you have now, and I have to tell you that that earpiece is great when you're gardening. So that was my new discovery in the last week. During break, it's nice to have one of those earpieces while you're gardening.
I bought a thing that hangs on my visor.
Oh, really?
That works like a champ.
So it was Juanita and I, you know Juanita. In fact, I talked to her the other day, and I said, Juanita, I got to bring you up to Jeff City because I always talk about you on the floor, and I want my colleagues to meet you. So yesterday when we were going to PetSmart to pick up cat food and dog food and bird food and all that kind of stuff, I was talking on the earpiece. And I was talking to a couple of candidates who are running for office, municipality-wise. And, like, Juanita couldn't believe it. She's, like, older. But she couldn't believe I was having this conversation with this little small thing in my ear. And I think I scared a couple of people at PetSmart yesterday. Because I...
Talking to yourself?
You know how I get really passionate about certain things? You know, just sometimes it happens, I get a little bit passionate about stuff, and I was in line yesterday, I was, like, behind someone, and I was about to pay for the cat food, dog food, bird food, and I just burst out and said, no, don't mention my name, I don't want my name to be, and the people, the clerk and the person who was being serviced, they looked back and they're like, oh, what did we do? I mean, they were just so off-put by... you know, me raising my voice and PetSmart. It was kind of funny. And I had to apologize to them. And I was like, you know, I really apologize. I'm on this thing right here. And I guess a lot of people haven't adopted this whole ear thing and trying to be safe and all that kind of stuff. But what it's done in the meantime is confuse people who are around you. So before I knew about this ear thing, when I saw other people with ear things and they were talking on the highway or something, I'd look and I'd say, nobody's on the phone or nobody's in the car. I don't see a cell phone and they're talking to themselves. And little did I know that they were actually using their Bluetooth. And so anyway, I think that should be a requirement in the state as well when we drive. We should use our Bluetooth as often as possible because any level of distracted driving is going to put us in a really bad situation. And you know, the number of accidents that are caused by distracted driving, I think it's about 250,000 nationally. And a good number of those people who drive while they're distracted, they're young people. And wouldn't it be just so awful if there is a young person who has everything before them in their lives, gets into an accident because they were distracted in one way or the other, or didn't have their seatbelt on, and then the rest of their lives, they're sitting up, pinned up to possibly a wheelchair, or they won't be able to participate with other people in the community because they did not have their seatbelt on, or they were doing something that was just distracting their mobility in the process. I mean, all of those things really concern me, Senator. What do you think?
We've got a lot of issues. Yeah, distracted driving's tough. And, you know, we say it. We said we want to, excuse me, we said we want to address it, and then we turn around and we do things to encourage it. You know, you've been here 12 years. I've only been here 3. Sometimes what we say isn't, you know, we talk the talk. We don't necessarily walk the walk.
Yeah, well, I can tell you when you get into an accident, Greg Barnes, his family lives in my district. In fact, he was born and raised on the same street where I was born and raised. That's how local we are, kind of like yourself. You know, you grew up on the same street and you're a neighborhood girl or neighborhood guy. And, you know, let me tell you, Greg Barnes is one of the more brilliant people that I've ever known. And he works for the Judiciary Committee in Washington, D.C. But I can tell you, with all of the smarts that he has, on that day that he was in that accident on the highway on 54, he completely became a humble person. Mr. President?
Senator from the 14th.
I noticed the absence of a quorum.
Absence of a quorum has been noted. We do not have a quorum. Sergeant of Arms, please ring the bell. Quorum has been established. Please resume.
Mr. President, now what were you saying?
Senator from the 23rd.
Mr. President, raise a point of order that the amendment goes beyond the scope of the bill.
Senator from the 23rd has raised a point of order. Does any senator wish to be heard on that? Seeing none, the senator from the 25th. The point of order will be referred to the president pro tem. Senator from the 25th.
Thank you, Mr. President. The point of order is well taken, and send the amendment back. It does go beyond the scope of the underlying bill.
The point of order is well taken. Madam Secretary, send the amendment back. Senator from the 14th.
Fire review.
Proceed.
At this point, do I still have the floor? Or should I ask to be recognized again?
Does any senator desire to be heard?
Yes, Mr. President.
Senator from the 14th.
I would like to inquire of the senator from the 4th.
Senator of the 4th, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Let's continue in our conversation about seatbelts and why they are so important.
Well, again, you know, I know the senator from 13th had a same experience that your friend had on 54. I think it was last year or the year before.
Really? Did his car get...
He ended up in the median, yeah.
Really?
That little wire that they put down the middle is the one that stopped it from going over into the other lanes.
Wow. You know, those stories like that should be told, and they should be told often. You know, what I'm concerned about is the number of people that are in accidents who don't wear their seatbelts or don't wear helmets, and ultimately they're going to come to the state. And here's the other thing that has not been talked about in this. So you know, the handler of the bill earlier said something to the effect that, you know, these people have insurance and they're in an income bracket where they're not going to need MoHealthNet. But that makes the assumption they're still working in their daily job that they've always had. You know, if you are prohibited from thinking or processing or doing other things.
Three senators on the floor. The senator from Phelps, what reason do you rise?
Mr. President, would you lay that bill on the informal calendar, please?
The bill shall be laid on the informal calendar. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you see if there are messages from the governor? If there are, I would ask for a waiver of the reading and that it be printed in the journal.
Madam Secretary, there are messages from the governor. They shall be waived and printed in the journal. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you see if there are messages from the House? And if there are, would you please have those read?
There are messages from the House. Madam Secretary, please read those messages.
Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Bill 1466, an act relating to mathematics and science tutoring centers. Also, House Committee substitute for House Bill 1449, an act relating to economic incentives, in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Respectfully, Daniel Adam Crumless, Chief Clerk.
Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, so under the order of business of reports of standing committees.
Reports of standing committees. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics has a report.
Please send the report forward. Read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics, to which was referred Senate Committee substitute for Senate Bill 714, begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Respectfully, Senator Dempsey, Chairman.
Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senator, the order of business of announcements.
Announcements. Senator from Lawrence.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on the Judiciary will meet on adjournment in the lounge.
Thank you. Announcements? Further announcements? Senator from the 23rd.
No. It wasn't ruled on. Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection. Excuse me, Mr. President. No further. Let's go to announcements, Mr. President. Without objection, Senator, the order of business of announcements.
We are on the order of business of announcements. Senator from the 23rd.
All right. We gave them a second chance. They still don't want to say anything. Mr. President, no further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand adjourned under the rules.
Senator from the 23rd has asked for adjournment motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate shall stand adjourned under the rules.